Hi everyone, and welcome to Dr. Dark After Dark number 44 with @FedUpBizOwner, and we're going to cover the US election. So those that know FedUp on Twitter, he's still very fed up. He's got a lot of views on this. This is his third appearance on the pod. Previously, he correctly predicted in early August that mail-in voting was going to be a big thing, and we would all be talking about it. And then in September, we had a podcast on after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died on the SCOTUS stuff. And so we're going to mainly cover the election, but we're going to get a bit of an update as well from the franchise financing industry where he actually works. So if you remember, that's a $1 trillion industry in the US in terms of franchises. So it's a 5% of the economy. Look, this podcast is going to get political. Please don't get mad. Keep an open mind. The whole point of doing this is just to be prepared for what might happen. And we can all argue about the polls all day, but they're ultimately just statistical. So anything could still happen. So if you're getting really agitated when you're listening and you want to turn off, just try and get to the end because, hey, you might learn something. And if you're prepared for what might happen, you might make better decisions. So look, as always, it's not investment advice. Please do your own research. Welcome back, FedUp. How are you doing?
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
I am very good. It's a beautiful morning in Hong Kong. So the humidity is
gone. Beautiful night in Florida.
Yeah. All right. So you wanted to start with a quick update on what's going on with lending, because you've seen a few different dynamics in the last kind of couple of months. So why don't we start with that?
Yeah. Lending is non-existent. So I know when we spoke about a month ago, I had reported that lending was back online. It seemed to be a spigot that opened. Spigot is shut. The common denominator of the spigot is very simple. Everybody wants to see what happens with the election from the banking side. And more importantly, no matter who wins, they want to see a cohesive policy so that they can continue to figure out how to mitigate risk. It's the overarching theme I hear from every bank. So without any type of national strategy, national policy, regardless of what the policy is, good, bad, otherwise, we're just not going to get back to lending until banks can understand the climate. It's as simple as that. So that's the overarching theme of the last 2 to 3 weeks.
Right. And I think that makes sense in what we're seeing in markets. Last week, pretty much everything went down. Oh, by the way, I've been told by some people I have to give you hell on Bitcoin because that went up quite a lot in the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you noticed.
Enough with Bitcoin.
we'll do another one on that at some point. But actually, almost all markets have been going down, whether it's risk on, risk off. The one thing that hasn't, of course, is the US dollar, which has been going up. And this is pretty classic before an election uncertainty. People just want certainty. So I could completely see if I was running a bank, of course, I'm going to wait. Why wouldn't I? There's chaos.
But it's less about the election, quite frankly, than it is if they knew that the country wasn't going to be locked down again, or they knew what the policy in a specific area would be in, say, 6 months.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that lending would stop, but right now it's frozen. Because everybody wants to see what the policy is going to be. It's really that simple. So I've had multiple loan files that were going to be approved 2 to 3 weeks ago, basically just get tabled until the election is over, whenever that may be.
Right. Well, let's get to that. So I think everyone's probably noticed there's an election on Tuesday. If the polls are correct, and now I'm starting to trigger some people, I fully understand, but just listen, then as they were in 2018 in the midterms, they were very, very accurate. The polling error was minuscule. Then it's a Biden landslide. And you might not like that, but if the polls are basically correct, it will be a Biden landslide. If it's like 2016, which it might be, then Trump has a decent chance. A Trump landslide seems really difficult. I mean, it would have to be, I mean, that really would be the end of polling, but we're going to find out. So there's no point getting mad on it. We're going to find out in a couple of days. So what's worrying you most at the moment
What's worrying me?
Yeah. Oh, well, what's the number one really thing simple. That's worrying you?
That the votes don't get counted. Very right. simple. Regardless of what they are, we just don't count them. And it, you know, I think it's one of those situations where I keep posting this, and I've said it a bunch of times, and I've triggered many people, and it is what it is. But 10:30 p.m. on Tuesday literally defines the future of this country, because Trump is going to be ahead in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. This isn't up for debate. It's based on how they count absentee and mail-in ballots and when. And he's going to be ahead, because in-person voting, I think everybody agrees, is going to skew Republican. And I think everybody agrees that mail-in voting is going to skew Democratic. So when we hit 10:30 on Tuesday and Trump is ahead, what's he going to say? I mean, his Twitter account keeps saying no votes counted past 11:03. So if that happens, then what? That's my fear.
Right.
What happens? Well, he just says, I win. I'm ahead, I win. Ballots are no good. They're invalid. They're fraud. I win, you lose, go away. Whether you like Biden, don't like Biden, like Trump, don't like Trump, if you are an American, and obviously you know where I skew on the political scale if you've listened to me before, I sure as hell don't vote Democratic. This is not something to take lightly. And it's all in play, and it's all very realistic.
So, okay, so I get that, but I've looked into this a lot. So I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. So the one of them you mentioned, Michigan, they are allowed to count the day before for counties above 25,000 people, whether they get all those in or not, for the mail-in, that is. So Michigan may be less. We don't know. It will probably take a few days to come in. And also Minnesota is almost certain to go down, I think. Even Clinton won that. So, but Pennsylvania is incredibly important. Quite clearly. I mean, it's a pretty much a must win for Trump. My main point is that if I take Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and even Arizona, although that's a later time zone, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina all count in advance, as does Texas, which I'm not saying will go Dem, but I'm saying it will give us a very good clue of how people are doing. So if it's super close in Texas, when Trump won it last time by what, 8 or 9 points, that's a huge data point. So there's a lot of the southern states that actually do count before, which, by the way, I really don't understand why people wouldn't count in advance. It seems kind of crazy. But and so if, say, Biden gets Florida or Georgia or North Carolina or whatever, then but is behind in the Rust Belt.
If he wins Florida, we're done.
Yeah.
If he wins any of the three you just said, it's
right. Over. But I'm saying we're going to get that before 10:30. We're probably going to know those, because they're pretty quick to get the results out, as in the networks to call them. And people should remember there's no national body that calls the election. It's actually done by the media. It's a very complex thing, but they're pretty conservative. They haven't got a state wrong pretty much ever. In 20 years, they haven't. So on election night, that is.
I mean, here's my issue, and it's not really an issue. It's just more a point. I mean, North Carolina counts their votes early, right? As you just described, right? Yes. Agreed. Well, what did Trump tell everybody to do? Vote twice. Test the system. Well,
That was in North Carolina specifically, I think. So
correct. Yeah, it's the only state he said that in, quite conveniently. So the question is, how are they possibly going to determine who voted twice by 10:30 on Tuesday? The answer is they're not going to be able to. And if all the Trump supporters vote twice, you're going to see a massive overcounting of Republican votes. Very simple. That's just how it will be. So, it's to me, I don't believe in coincidences, and He didn't tell any other state to vote twice to test the system. He told North Carolina because he knows North Carolina sets the tone for everything else to follow. And, right. And that's my opinion.
Right. So I understand that. But how do people practically vote twice? First of all, it's a felony. And you are literally breaking the law. And I fully understand some people are not going to care and will try and do it. But practically, you know, so you would have to either mail in vote twice or do a combination of a mail in plus an in person, maybe an in person in advance, then on the day. And, I mean, but at the end of the day, this will be a lot of it's computerized and your ID is tied to something that's already voted.
I agree with
loopholes,
you.
But you know.
Oh no! I agree with everything you just said. At the end of the day, only one vote will end up counting for that person, unless they intended to commit the felony. But how are you going to catch that by 10:30 on Tuesday when Trump is reporting he won? All that's going to happen afterwards is you're going to disqualify the double votes. Well, how's that going to work in this climate? I mean, that's the issue. That's where I see this is, yeah, that's great. But having gone to law school, being a lawyer, I understand what perception means. I understand what possession means, you know, where it's 9/10 of the law. And given how, you know, he uses his Twitter account, his following and all of that, they're not going to care about the technical arguments on November 10th. You know what they're going to care about? Well, Trump was ahead on November 3rd. And you Democrats are trying to steal the election and you're trying to discount the votes and it won't matter how or why it happened. That's just what's going to happen here. So the fact that he told North Carolina specifically to vote twice, very convenient as far as I'm concerned. Very yeah. convenient and not in a positive way.
And do you think that, I mean, he announced the other day, so normally the candidates will be in like a local hotel and you'd think, right, that Trump owns a hotel in D.C.
Hold on, Chris. Can I go back for a second on North Carolina?
Sure. Yeah.
So given that North Carolina is the first state to count ballots and they count their votes early, if you were going to delegitimize the votes that come in, would it not make sense to skew to the positive your vote count as much as possible? Whether it gets discounted later or not is irrelevant if your intent is to skew the vote count to your favor on election night, right?
Yes,
because if you understand that Democrats are going to vote by mail, you need to combat that. Well, you combat that by having Republicans vote twice. It'll work itself out later, but the problem is the American public doesn't care about later. They care about right now, and they're going to make their own judgments based on what they see right now on 11-3. They're not going to wait. That's where the issue comes in, and that's why he told people in North Carolina to vote twice. It's going to juice the vote total temporarily, and it's going to make the perception different from the reality.
Yeah, no, I get that. Well, we'll come back to that because I've got some questions on that later. Basically, Trump said he's going to be in the White House on election night, which is not the norm. Normally, the candidates will be in hotels. He even owns a hotel in D.C. So, but he's, of course, blamed the COVID rules saying you can't have more than 50 people in D.C. and he's just going to have it in the White House. I mean, sure, that's one reason. But I mean, there's the obvious other reason, which is just related to what you were saying. You know, what do you think his real motivations are for wanting to be in the White House that night?
He's quite literally going to say that the votes on 11-3 are all that should be counted. He's going to piggyback on Justice Kavanaugh's concurring opinion, where Kavanaugh basically stated that it would cause upheaval if one party was to win election night and then it would be overturned through mail-in voting, which is absolutely ridiculous. And we can get into that from a constitutional perspective. And he's just going to piggyback off that opinion and declare himself the winner. It's very simple to me. I don't think there's any in between here. I don't think there's ambiguity. I don't think there's anything to even discuss. He's going to be ahead at 10 p.m. on Tuesday. He's going to declare himself the winner. And whatever will happen is going to happen. Very simple. And he's going to piggyback off of the great Supreme Court that he controls. You know, per his Twitter, he controls the Supreme Court, and he's going to piggyback off of Judge Kavanaugh's opinion. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, that opinion was kind of an odd one. So for listeners, like, it's very anti-democracy opinion. It's not an official opinion. It was just his concurring opinion, right? And they didn't was this the one all related to Pennsylvania? I'm trying to remember. There's been so many recently, but this was related to Pennsylvania, right? In terms of how many days after. So I think they have until the 6th of November to count legally. And normally the Supreme Court has gone with statewide law when it comes to these types of decisions. But of course, everything's so difficult this year because so much has changed and there's a lot of temporary laws and everything's being litigated every way possible. But it does, I don't know, I've always kind of had the view, I don't think the Supreme Court's going to go against democracy in a not counting votes, but I mean, I could be wrong on that. So,
well, my opinion is, and it's been on the state level, that is what has been happening, where the state courts have skewed towards counting ballots versus not counting ballots. That has been happening on the state level for the most part. But all bets are off if you have conflicting opinions, you know, on the state level. I mean, you know, I've been in a number of discussions with people on Twitter and things of that nature. And, you know, it's very simple to me where if you have conflicting opinions on what can be counted and when, it impacts the nation, right? So to think of it this way, if Wisconsin says you can only count votes till X date, and North Carolina says Y date, and Florida says Z date, well, what happens in North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Florida impacts Wyoming. It impacts New York. It impacts Delaware. So what I believe will end up happening here is there's going to be challenges to all of these arbitrary dates of counting. The Supreme Court is going to combine all the cases, and they're going to set a rule on what can be counted and when. And if Justice Kavanaugh's opinion sort of prevails, you can basically, you know, and I'm not even being hyperbolic, quite frankly, you can burn the Constitution. So it is what it is. That's what we're dealing with. That's what we're facing. And there's not much really more to say about it.
Okay. So also last time we spoke, a few people gave me feedback that they wanted me to continue to play devil's advocate on some of this. So let's go to another scenario. Like, when would Mitch McConnell dump Trump? So let's say the polls are right, and let's say Trump loses Florida. Let's say he even loses Texas. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that if that happened, Trump can say whatever the hell he wants, and it doesn't matter. He's lost, I mean, quite clearly. And McConnell has to think about the go-forward plan for the GOP as well. I mean, McConnell might be over if Trump loses. I don't know. I mean, he's getting old. But is there a scenario where Trump gets instant dumped by McConnell, and then in which case he's kind of done?
Yeah, I think he already did. I think that's why Simulator didn't pass.
Yeah, but he can flip-flop very easily. So,
so I am fairly certain the Republicans have already dumped Trump. And I don't really think that's in question to anybody who's impartial, you know, sort of on this. Because if they hadn't, there would be a stimulus deal passed because Trump wants one bigger than the Democrats. So clearly, if the Republicans were on board with Trump, they would pass a stimulus, at least at the Democrat level, because it's less than what Trump wants, right? So from my perspective, the GOP senators dumped Trump a long time ago. The question really is, what are they going to do based on what Trump does, right? I mean this, and I'm not being hyperbolic, and I truly wish I was. At 10:30 p.m. on Tuesday, all bets are off about everything. If he tweets out, I won the election fair and square, and the Democrats rigged the election with this mail-in voting, what now what? I mean that in a legitimate way. Now what?
Well, okay, so on that, I think there's been a lot of people working on this too. And I think this is where the media genuinely has a part to play. And not just media, but actually people who are influential in all sorts of you know, in social media and whatever. And in some ways, this is the strength and weakness of the US system. It's very decentralized. As I said, there's no federal body. Like in the UK, there's the Election Commission. They tell you who's won. It's pretty simple. In the US, it's not like that. You know, the media calls each state. There's a very interesting podcast that 538 did with ABC's head of political, what's it called, the decision desk. So that they, he's the guy that makes the decision on every state when they're going to call it. He's been doing it for 26 years, since 1994. It's a really good podcast to for listeners to understand how, because unless you've looked into it, you'd be pretty surprised how states get called. There's a lot of different models and things, but they're, and they're not waiting for all the vote to come in. But this time they've all said they're going to be really cautious, unless it's obvious someone's won a state, because they've never called a state in the last 20 years that then went against them, any of the mainstream media, even say Fox. You know, last time people waited on Michigan because it was unknown. And they've been quite clearly conditioning the American public to not believe there's going to be a result on election night. And the media definitely has a part to play. But the problem is, of course, is everyone, the media splits people. So if you're a Trump supporter and a Dem supporter, you might not care. So,
but I don't know how it's conditioning. I don't know how you can physically have a result when you have, in some cases, 30 to 40 to 50% of the vote not counted.
Well, that's the point.
I actually don't know how you can.
Well, that's what they've been doing, though, is conditioning people to not expect a result on election night and just to wait.
Right. And that's where the issue comes in, because I think Trump has tweeted four times in the last 3 days that the election needs to end on election night. He's been very clear about this. I don't think his or intentions are disguised. I think they're out there in the open for anybody who's willing to see them. And if you're not willing to see them, well, you're going to find out at 10:30 on Tuesday, right along with me.
Right. And he has absolutely been doing that. There's no question. But it's not his decision. So now he can obviously influence a lot of people and incite a lot of things to happen. But ultimately, it's not his decision. So.
Why isn't it his decision?
Well, he holds the White House. He can't decide he's won the election unilaterally.
But I take that. But why can't he? He has the White House, the Attorney General. He holds the military until he doesn't. Why exactly can't he do that?
Because
and I'm playing devil advocate back.
Yeah, sure,
at you.
But on the military side, I also, and I've heard this from several people that have actually spoken to people on senior military people in the US, and it's kind of crazy that this is getting to this. But like, there are generals in the US who, I mean, if it actually came to that, they're ultimately going to have to make a decision on. I mean, Nuremberg showed that you can't just follow the chain of command without, if it's breaking the law. And if, I mean, there are people planning already, if Trump refused to, let's say he lost and refused, but he says he won and he refused to leave the White House on the 21st of Jan or whenever it is.
But let me ask you a question. How is he going to lose if the ballots aren't counted? See, that's the part that I don't think everybody truly appreciates. The ballots are not going to be counted in full on the night of the election. If his position is to delegitimize those ballots, all bets are off. Now, I agree with you, by the way, when it comes to the generals, because for the last 2 to 3 months, the generals, the retired generals, have been out speaking against Trump. And having been in the military, I kind of understand what that means, because retired, active, makes no difference. You generally do not come out and speak against the commander in chief. Retired or active makes no difference. So for me, that speaks volumes. And it almost tells me that they are speaking on behalf of the active duty. But if Trump is ahead by 10 points in Pennsylvania at 10:30 on Tuesday, now what? He said he won Pennsylvania. And the mail and the ballots that are left to be counted are fraud. Now what? Where are we, Chris?
Well, okay, so as of today, 92 million votes have already been cast. So they've already been processed. Those are, unless some of them are double votes, then some amount will be rejected. But the rejection rates are about 1% at the moment. They're very low. And actually, they're normally around that. There hasn't been any massive shift. And I know there are some examples in, say, Georgia, where there's been more issues. But I'm just talking in general. So we've already had 92 million votes. They're in before election day. That number will be, you know, let's say 100 million by election day. Then on election day, you're going to get a few tens of millions of votes. Well, we're already, let's say you get, well, we don't know how many you're going to get, but it's going to be tens of millions. So that's already going to get you to the 137 million that was in 2016. I think most people are thinking there'll be 150 to 160 million votes this time. And that's a huge turnout, which is, I would argue, well, sorry, one argument is it's great for democracy. It gives legitimacy to the election. People are voting. That's good. It also tends to favor Democrats when there's high turnout in modern times. So these votes are already banked. And they were postmarked before the 3rd of November. I can't really see how a court's going to say in Pennsylvania, well, you counted this vote on the 4th of November, but it came in the 25th of October. It doesn't count. Like, I mean, that, well, if that happened, honestly, the U.S. is going into civil war. Like, quite seriously.
I agree with you.
Because that literally is getting rid of democracy. So
I agree with every single word you just said. And the problem is, Kavanaugh's opinion states that those votes should not be counted. It's very simple. His opinion actually states that. That having a clear, decisive result on election night is more important than counting the votes, which is absolutely appalling that a Supreme Court justice would say that. And I say that as somebody who my favorite justice of all time in law school, and I almost got kicked out of law school because I espoused his views, was Antonin Scalia.
Yeah.
So it is appalling to me, appalling, that a Supreme Court justice could say with a straight face that the right to vote is less important than counting on time. That is insane and ridiculous. And it is absolutely going to cause this country into chaos if that actually happens.
Okay, so but let's go down this. This is interesting. So Scalia would not have... Okay, so let's say Scalia and Ginsburg were still alive. They would not have... Neither of them would have come up with that opinion. I think that's probably pretty clear.
I think Scalia would not... I know Ginsburg would not have.
But she 100% would not. But okay, but let's assume Scalia wouldn't. And then... Okay, so Barrett was, of course, a clerk to Scalia. And we don't know that much about Barrett. She's pretty new to the court below, the whichever circuit she's on. And Roberts, I seriously doubt, would have that opinion. And
there's
so
no way Roberts would.
Roberts would no way go against democracy on that. So then you've got the three
no.
Dems, Roberts, and maybe you have Barrett on the, let's say, the Scalia side, which would all be the same as the Dems. And there's your five votes. And I'm not sure about Gorsuch either. Now, of course, Alito and Thomas are just going to like, I mean, they're just memes now, as is.
But here's the, Chris, but here's the thing. None of these judges should be supporting Kavanaugh's opinion. None. Not a single one. If they apply strict scrutiny, there is no scenario in which these votes should not be counted. None. 0.0. I don't care about timing. I don't care about image. I care about nothing. The right to vote is the literal number one bedrock of the United States Constitution.
Right.
That is the entire Constitution. To undermine the right to vote by time is absurd. It's if this happens, I'm not one to advocate civil war. I don't want civil war. I don't want all the stuff that's happening. I truly do not. At the end of the day, if this happens, America is going to burn.
Right.
You cannot discount votes due to an arbitrary date by which you count votes that were validly cast prior to November 4th. November 3rd, excuse me.
We agree on that for sure. I'm just trying to lay out that there could easily be five justices that disagree with Kavanaugh, and therefore his opinion doesn't matter. I mean, as in, if what happens, so let's say, I mean, obviously we know how the three Dems would vote on it, and I think we know how Roberts would vote. So you need one other justice to go with them. And let's say none of them did. And let's say this all mattered, right? For Pennsylvania, for a lot of the Rust Belt, then it's going to be complete chaos. But I think I have a little bit more faith in the system.
But imagine given where we are, they rammed through Amy Coney Barrett. And she decides this election with that? I mean, can you even imagine if she's the deciding vote with what we just said? Like, could you just, I mean, they've already ruled that Pennsylvania, you know, the ballot counting and all of that, right? But can you imagine if Amy Coney Barrett reverses that decision, given every single thing that has happened? I am afraid if that is what ends up happening.
Right.
Truly afraid. Because it's I'm just saying this just as a lawyer, as a libertarian. There should not be a scenario where votes are not counted. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay, look. And I guess she was Scalia's clerk. One of many, of course. I don't really think anyone knows. And I mean, hey, she could even recurse herself on things. I doubt it.
She should. If she values her career.
She absolutely should. And by the way, if she's thinking long-term that she could have this seat for 40 years, she would. That's probably the smart thing to do.
She should.
Trump can't get rid of her now.
I have said that if she values her career and her reputation as a judge, she'll recuse herself, because to not recuse herself, anything she says for the next 40 years of her career, no one will care about.
Right. Basically, do a Jeff Sessions, in effect.
Nobody will care. Yeah. If she doesn't recuse herself from a case where she was put on to decide it 5 days beforehand, Chris, I mean this, and I really wish I was not speaking hyperbolic, but I'm speaking literal fact, and I'm sorry if the truth people get triggered. If she votes to restrict the right to vote, having been put on the court 5 days before an election, the country's going to burn. Doesn't even matter who wins. The country's just going to burn. You can't restrict the right to vote. It is the number one right of American citizens. It is the literal Constitution. So it would just be, for me, absolutely insane for that to happen. And as you know, I mean, I know you've seen my threads. I'm on the side of the Supreme Court's going to rule, as many of the lower state courts have, that votes are going to be counted. The fun happens after they count them, right? After we determine what's to be counted, the fun happens with the challenges of what was counted. And what I want all of your listeners to really understand is you don't get to challenge 100 ballots because they were put in a mailbox in a city. You don't get to challenge them for that. You have to challenge the efficacy of every single ballot that you choose to challenge. Every one of them. If you want to claim that the ballot are fraud, you have to challenge each individual ballot. And that is why this election has 0.0 chance of ending till God knows how long, if Trump doesn't concede, if he is losing.
Right. So what you're basically saying is the real winner. What you're saying here is the real winner here is lawyers.
Yeah, 100%. But I want you to think about it. If you have let's just talk about Florida for a second, right? I think there's like 6 million votes in Florida, whatever. I don't know the number. I'm making it up. And let's say 5 million were cast in person and 1 million were cast remotely, right? Mail-in ballot, whatever. And let's say Biden wins those 80% to 20%. Well, if you want to discount those 800,000 ballots, you have to pick each ballot that you want to discount and find a specific reason to discount each specific ballot. This isn't Bush versus Gore, where you have hanging chats, where there's a group of ballots that all fit the same thing. No, you don't get to do that. If you want to challenge the vote of Joe Guerra from Miami, you have to challenge the vote of Joe Guerra from Miami. You don't get to challenge Joe Guerra from Miami and say 100,000 votes need to be eliminated because of Joe Guerra's vote. It doesn't work that way. And if the Supreme Court or the courts rule that also, you can burn the Constitution again with that. because that's where we're headed. You don't, it's like a tort case. Well, he got hurt, so I got hurt. It doesn't work that way. You have to challenge each specific ballot on the facts. And a lot of people don't know that. They don't understand that. And that is why, quite literally, I know what Trump's position is going to be, is that there should be no votes counted past 11-4, because otherwise he has to challenge every single ballot that is then counted after election night. And there's no person on this earth that can do that in multiple states, which right. is why I had in my original thread that it's all going to come down to one state. They're going to horse trade and go back and forth, and the election would get decided within one state. I thought it was Florida, you know, originally.
It's probably Pennsylvania.
Based on results. But originally I thought it was Florida, but it is Pennsylvania. But it's the same argument. There's no difference. But
by the way,
I really want your listeners to understand that. You can't throw out $100,000 ballots claiming fraud. You have to claim fraud on each individual ballot of the 100,000. That's how it works.
So that means we might get, well, so it might be 21-21 by the time we get a result then.
It would be never. The answer is never. And Trump said that like 6 months ago, because if you understand the law, you already know that. There's no way that we will ever know who won this election. It's very simple. We're actually never going to know.
So does anyone it would be awesome for the memes if like Hanging Chads decided this election again, but does anyone vote with punch cards still, or has that all got phased out? I assume it's gone, but
I honestly wouldn't know. I wouldn't even want,
cause it could be one county somewhere that still has them. Cause it's actually how you vote is a county by county decision. So
I know Georgia's barcode because I saw something today, but I mean, I don't know enough to comment on it. I literally just want your listeners to know that you don't get to just throw out 200,000 ballots because you claim fraud. Like, you just don't get to do that. So that's why the date and all of the dates are so important, because the only way you get to throw out 100,000 ballots is if you can establish that they can't be counted because of the date in which they were mailed or received or counted. That's why it all comes down to the counting question. And I happen to believe that the courts will, as they have in basically every state, skew towards counting ballots. What Trump does with what's counted, couldn't tell you. What he does about the rules that the state Supreme Courts have that are scattershot, can't tell you. But I am praying that the Supreme Court skews towards counting ballots, because if they don't, there are going to be a lot of pissed off people in California about it, or New York, or Jersey, or if Trump is losing and there's a report that comes out that says he's ahead by 200,000 in mail-in ballots, people in Wyoming are going to be pissed. The point is, ballots should be counted. And to do anything other than that is just going to lead to chaos. So 10:30 p.m. Tuesday, strap in.
All right. So why don't we move to what's the kind of current status with civil unrest? I mean, there've been some flashpoints in, I think, Pennsylvania. I mean, of course, it has to be Pennsylvania, right? So, but I mean, you know, in the riots before, there was some troops deployed here and there. Trump would argue it was he had the right to. Some governors said he didn't. I mean, it was obviously it wasn't. I think most people. Well, actually, I don't know. Some people think he dealt with it well. Some people think he didn't. But, I mean, do you think there will be mass deployment of federal troops in certain states? How about on election day? I mean, election intimidation is again something that the courts look very, very badly on. But,
well, you know, depends who's ruling. Yeah. I mean, did you see what happened in Harris County in Texas today, where the Republicans are trying to disqualify 100,000 ballots?
But they lost that one, right?
In Harris County?
Yeah, they lost.
Well, it hasn't been ruled on yet, as far as I know. It could have been ruled on.
They got ruled on a few hours ago, but a lower court. Okay. It's going to go up to the higher court now. They lost that one specifically. Yeah.
What was the ruling? I saw that the case was filed. I didn't see the ruling.
There was a ruling with no opinion, but it was just a straight, quick ruling. So they lost it. The GOP lost it, but it's going to get appealed now. So
okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's just it, you know, it, it's just one of those things where, you know, I don't know is the answer to your question. Everything is on the table. And Americans, I love them. They're, you know, we're hardworking people. We stick to our own. We're very tribal. That's on purpose. They do that to divide us, to conquer us. That's another discussion for another day. But at the end of the day, all bets are on the table, Chris. I mean, nothing is, anything could happen. Anything. There's nothing that I could see happening that I'd be like, oh, yeah, that surprised me. There's nothing. Nothing whatsoever. So
I think there is. I think there is one thing. I think if there's a, let's just say if either candidate, let's be neutral, has a landslide win and it just is what it is, that would be the surprise. Maybe it's a November surprise.
let me rephrase. That could happen, but it won't happen the night. Let me put it this way. If that does happen, the only way it happens is a Trump landslide because of the way the mail-in votes are counted and processed. The only landslide could be a Trump landslide election night. Let me put it this way. Biden landslides election night, Trump will be resigning 5 days later because he's going to go on and run his businesses and will not be bothered with what's going on. Okay.
But I mean, if Biden won Texas, then I mean, it's like, it's game over. So, I mean, I'm just saying that these things are possible, and Texas does count.
Let me put it this way. If Trump doesn't win North Carolina, the election's over. We can all go to sleep. And that is why I find it very, very convenient, as I said earlier, that is the only state he told citizens to vote twice in. I find that beyond convenient. I don't believe in coincidences, as I said. That is not by accident. He meant exactly what he said. He wants to test the system, and we're going to see what happens as a result of the test. Can I go tinfoil hat time or no? Or am I allowed to do that?
You can go you can go aluminium foil or aluminum foil. And by the way, it's got an I towards the end. Very simple. It's aluminium. Sorry to trigger people. I had a massive argument with a very smart CEO about this. And I had to explain to him that American scientists tend to call it aluminium because that's how it's spelt and it's what it's actually called. But anyway, you can put your aluminum hat on. Yes, go for it.
The bottom line here is it doesn't matter what you think, what I think, what the polls say, what anybody has to say. The only thing that matters is what Trump decides to do at 10:30 on Tuesday night. Because he either is going to allow mail-in votes to be counted and be gracious about the counting and whatever will be, or he is going to declare himself the winner, delegitimize all mail-in votes, and contest the election. And I think these outcomes are truly binary because the way the country is split, the way things are counted, where the votes are counted, how they're counted, they are binary outcomes. It doesn't matter if Biden wins California by 50 million votes and Trump wins Florida by 10 million votes, neither of which are possible, but bear with me. These things do not matter. What matters is what happens in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Texas to a degree, North Carolina especially, Georgia especially, Nevada and Arizona. Everything else is noise. And the question is, what does Trump have to say about mail-in votes? And people are you know, they get triggered. They can't deal with reality and facts. But the bottom line is Trump either accepts mail-in votes as legitimate or he does not. We will know that answer at 10:30 on Tuesday. And if he does not, everybody better have guns, gold and food. Very simple.
And Bitcoin. So on that last, I'm not going into that. Sorry, I'm just trying to trigger you. So, okay, but that gets us neatly into the US Postal Service. So Louis DeJoy, it's probably fair to say he's not universally loved. I mean, this is the guy that was basically made, put in charge by Trump of the USPS. He got people to dismantle machines that actually count like crazy number of votes per hour and automatic openers and all sorts of stuff, which just means it's going to take even longer. But also, and what not everyone may realize is there's daily KPIs that a lot of courts have basically, the USPS have been sued like a bazillion times. And so there's, they're reporting every day by state how quickly they're delivering votes and not. And then if it goes, it's slowed down a bit the last few days. And then there's like ways that they're going to remedy it. But of course, the whole point is if they can slow anything down right now, it might not get in by November 3rd. So this is a whole other angle that, you know, I think the Dems are going to get, they're going to be litigating like hell in this area if it all, you know, shit hits the fan.
Well, I will tell you what's very interesting in that regard is, did you see in Florida, the mailroom in Miami-Dade stacked with ballots upon ballots that were not processed nor delivered or and are just sitting in the mailroom?
I didn't see that, but okay. I can imagine it.
Well, yeah. it's happening. If anybody Googles it, they'll see it. And what's very interesting and most interesting about it is the person challenging and wanting an accounting is actually a Republican because it's Florida. So the Florida Attorney General is looking for an accounting of what is going on there. So, you know, really interesting from that perspective. But if anybody just looks, there are videos on YouTube and Twitter and all of that about what's going on in Miami. And I'm sure that's happening nationwide. But that is what's going on.
Okay, so I'm proposing we don't talk about the House because whatever happens, well, I guess maybe there are scenarios where GOP wins, but it seems pretty unlikely. I mean, if the House is going GOP due to some form of Trump kind of post-election legal challenge or whatever, then there's gonna be a lot of shit hitting the fan. But the Senate's very interesting. And even if we assume a completely normal election, it's still pretty close. I mean, it's not a coin toss. There's probably a slight favorability to the Dems. But at the end of the day, this is down to literally six or seven races that are tight. So, I mean, I guess that this just gets pulled in because, I mean, people obviously, this is a kind of a slightly down, but what comes after I don't vote in US is under the presidency one, the Senate vote? Is that what's next on the ballot?
That's what's on my ballot.
Or but it could be governor, I guess, if there's a governor, but yeah.
But I will leave it. I know where you're going with this and I will just leave it sort of as simply as I can. I don't think this is the kind of election, given the youth vote turnout and knowing generally how the youth tends to skew, and especially how millennials are going to skew, given that we've been screwed twice through 08 and now this crisis. I don't see a scenario where large turnout in that respect skews or helps Republicans. And I think it's a party line vote for Democrats, just up and down. I think either Trump wins and Republicans hold the Senate or Republicans are going to be destroyed. I don't think people are like, you know what? I hate Trump, but let me vote for Cory Gardner. I just don't see that. So I think either Trump wins and carries them all, or Trump sinks and takes them all with him on the Titanic. And personally, if the votes are counted, I think we're going down the Titanic. And if they're not counted, well, we won't have stimulus till June.
Or 2021. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, I don't think it's an either or. I think it's either yes or either no. I don't think Republicans can hold the Senate absent Trump winning, you know, and Trump winning is, of course, you know, based on what I said, you know, are we going to count the votes or not count the votes? So is what it is. We're going to find out Tuesday at 10:30 along with everybody else.
Okay, so let's assume at some point there's a result. Well, I think that's probably a fair assumption that at some point there's a result. I mean, we have infinite time. So, what do the Dems need in the Senate to be able to actually have a, let's assume if they win the Senate, they win everything else. I mean, if they win the Senate, Biden's won presidency, right? To your point, you just said. And then they have a DDD kind of like triumvirate, trifecta, whatever you want to call it. So they probably have 2 years to do stuff, just like Trump had 2 years to do stuff and Obama had 2 years to do stuff. And often then in the midterms, the Senate or House will flip or both flips away from the president's party. So, I mean, the numbers I've heard, you know, thrown around are like, well, you know, if the Dems get to 53 or 54, then they've probably got a pretty good majority because a few could vote against. So, you know, the Joe Manchins, the Kristen Sinemas of the world, who are more kind of very centrist. But if, you know, if it's 50-50 and they're relying on the VP vote, then there might not be stimulus or it might be much smaller. So what I'm getting at is the Senate matters a lot. And whether it's 50 votes or 54 or 52 or whatever, that also matters a lot. What's your kind of view on
that? Well, let me put this in a different way. Because I know where you're going with this. Let's assume, because this point only matters if what I say happens. But let's assume it is a decisive Biden victory and Republicans hold the Senate. Or Republicans don't hold the Senate. Either way, it's one and the same. Who exactly are they hurting by not passing stimulus? They cannot claim fiscal conservatism, having spent a deficit of 20, what are we at 28 trillion yet?
It's around that.
I don't know how you can claim conservatism or have a novena, you know, because you lost an election or if you lose the election. So let me put it this way. If they lose the Senate and it's a clean Democratic sweep, who exactly do they hurt by not passing stimulus before February? The stimulus is passing in February, with or without them. So do they have any intention ever of winning a national election again? Because if they do, they're going to pass stimulus. If they don't, they won't. Right? What is your point of not passing a stimulus if you lose the election? And I mean that quite literally.
You're the only thing I could think of
who just voted you out.
Right. The only thing I could think of was if GOP lose the Senate and the election, and that what happens is you get a very quick reemergence of the Tea Party, which we haven't really heard about for many years.
I think that's coming. Yeah. And I personally, I wish it would. That's what we need. That needs to happen. We need a third party in this country who's right. Not wanting to be divided and conquered. And that would be fantastic if that would happen. And I will leave it at that. And I think you will get a reemergence of the Tea Party. And it will be well-deserved and well-received. And I think they're going to reject every politician in both parties.
Right.
But there is no scenario where I can see how if Biden was to win the presidency and the Democrats were to take the Senate, and obviously they would maintain the House in that scenario, where Republicans could in any way benefit politically from not passing stimulus quite literally immediately right after the election. Because any protest vote that they have is just going to hurt the people who just voted them out. Now, if Trump was to run the presidency and Republicans were to hold the Senate, well, they better get on board with the Trump train because the Americans have spoken that they want more stimulus because Trump wants more than Pelosi. So I really don't see a scenario where Republicans should be dumb enough not to pass stimulus. I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen quickly. And if they decide to become fiscal conservatives after spending $28 trillion, it's going to be to their detriment and my detriment, quite frankly, for the rest of my life because we're going to have Democrats in charge till I'm dead. So, this is one of those scenarios where I don't think the choice is, you know, hyperbolic. I think it's literally what's going to happen if Republicans don't understand the moment that they're in, which is millennials hate them. They skew Democratic. They want free stuff. They've been screwed. They're being screwed again. And quite frankly, we're the first generation to not increase our wealth in the history of the United States. So I know where millennials are going to go, and it's going to be even worse for Gen Z behind us.
Yeah.
If we have no opportunity, they have less. So despite what you might see on social media or whatever, I know what gets taught in the colleges and law schools, which is socialism and Marx is great, which is ridiculous, but that's how they're going to vote. And if Republicans don't understand that because Mitch McConnell's 80 years old, they're going to get what they get.
Yeah. And for those listening, I'm theoretically about the oldest millennial possible, but
so
some would argue, we both are, right? Some would argue on the exact dates of millennials. And there is this 1978 to 1982 generation called X-genial, which we both fit into, I think, where you kind of grew up in an analog world, but had your formative years, i.e. from your mid-teenage years, university, college, in a digital world. And anyone that knows me in real life is probably laughing right now because they would all describe me as a boomer. So, and I think I just tweeted that you are too, every time we speak, you basically have to work out how to use the internet. So anyways, that's all, they're good points. And like, in some ways it's like more, I mean, this stimulus is going to happen. I mean, it's just about how big is it going to be? Also, I think on the three-party point is very interesting too. So if you look at most of Europe, and look at UK, for example, like, yes, there's been two main parties for a long time. But the politics are different. I mean, but broadly, you've got the Conservatives, which are like the GOP and Labour, like the Dems. But you've had a third party, the Liberal Democrats, for a long time that actually was in coalition quite recently in the UK. In Germany, it's been coalition for decades. And actually in New Zealand, you've had coalition for a long time, but Jacinda just won a majority, the first time in a long time. But actually in Europe, you've got, I would say, less partisan politics because you have more parties, and they just have forced the debate more towards the center. It's just in the US, it's just been so polarized. So maybe actually what needs to happen is a third or even a fourth party. You know, maybe that's a way forward for the US, because if they carry on the same path, it's getting more and more partisan, and it's just going to end badly. I mean,
I say this, and I get attacked on Twitter quite literally. I mean, every 2 minutes, because everybody assumes that I support Biden because I hate Trump. I hate Trump because he's a fascist, and he is doing fascist things. And people get triggered by it. And if you're triggered by that right now, I don't care. It is what it is. Learn history. He's a fascist. Deal with it. But that does not mean I support Biden. I support Biden. I don't support Biden. I support neither. But I would rather Biden, because I'm taking the long view, which is if the Democrats take over and they burn this country to the ground in 4 years, we're going to vote them out and they'll never take power again. If Trump wins, quite literally, the Republicans will never hold a higher power office till I'm dead. So I want conservative views to prevail. And I'm looking at the long game here, not the short game. And, you know, the bottom line is, and I think you might agree with this, Chris, most people are just generally fiscally conservative. Socially, I don't give a fuck. There's no party for that in the United States.
Right, that's
the
point.
It doesn't exist.
Because in the UK,
it's the Libertarian Party.
That's the Conservative Party in the UK. It's I want low taxes. But by the way, all this very right-leaning Supreme Court stuff in the US, i.e. guns, abortion, this type of stuff, and religion, it's just not part of it.
Nobody rational gives a shit. I'm sorry, I'm going to just be frank at this point. Nobody rational gives a shit about God or abortion or
Well, guns.
What's the look? No, no, I care about my guns. I want my guns.
No, that's the one.
I'm trying to think on the liberal side. Gay rights.
Yeah.
Nobody rational cares. We don't care. And for the record, the government shouldn't be telling you who to marry. Did I ever tell you? I'm going to give you an anecdote. When I was in law school, and I finished cum laude in law school, and I would have been summa cum laude but for this class, which was constitutional law. And my professor was an ultra, ultra liberal. And I mean ultra liberal, to the extent that his kid was selling pot in Massachusetts. And this is I won't tell you what school I went to, but this is fact. So the point is, he believed that everything should be legalized, drug laws and everything that the true ultra left espouses. And so I wrote a paper for my final exam, because it was about gay marriage, because I went to law school at the time where Massachusetts legalized gay marriage, which, so everybody can figure out, you know, where and when that is and how old I am and all of that. And my paper said the following: no one cares. Why is the I wrote four sentences. No one cares. Why is the government involved? If I want to marry a tree, that's my business. Why is the government telling me what to do? And most people who have common sense and logic can understand that. It's just that you have zealots on both sides who just can't accept that there's like a reasonable middle ground. And that's the problem with this country right now. It's really simple.
Right.
So that's where we are.
Okay. So a couple of things I wanted to touch on. So one was Supreme Court, and obviously we did a whole podcast on this last time, but, and a lot's happened since we spoke, and Comey Barrett got confirmed. Probably fair to say it was pretty contentious. And one of the first things to come up that she will be ruling on is there's an ACA. They start looking into the ACA case on November the 10th. Now, they may get a little distracted with election stuff, so I'm not quite sure how that will then work. But assuming that there's some result in the election, the Supreme Court still has to rule on a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, she has, what is it, 5 kids or more or something like that? I can't remember the exact number. And if this is all related, of course, to if this ACA thing gets shut down, this is all about the individual mandate, then that would surely give Dems much more course to pack the court. Which Biden has sort of edged away from. I mean, that's new from when we last spoke. Although he said, let's have a commission and have people on both sides. And he's kind of like not really, he's kind of saying stuff, but not really saying stuff. He can still do whatever he wants. But like, does 2021 just become an insanely political year for the Supreme Court? Playing a balancing act, which I think John Roberts will be well aware of.
I don't think so. Because... So I thought the ACA was unconstitutional when it was passed originally. And I was pissed off, quite frankly, when John Roberts upheld it. And I forget what year it was, but I was not happy about it. And I remember screaming about it. And anybody who knows me knows this, because it's ridiculous. And the Texas Supreme Court, quite frankly, has it right, in my opinion. And with or without Amy Coney Barrett, they were going to rule the ACA unconstitutional. This just got politicized because of what's going on right now, but what's happening was going to happen anyway. What is scarier from my perspective is I know Trump keeps talking about he's going to sign an executive order and pre-existing conditions are protected. That's insane. That's not true, and it doesn't exist. If that law is overturned, the pre-existing condition protections are going right along with it. And it doesn't matter what Trump signs. It doesn't matter what he says. They're gone. And giving coronavirus, of all things, you know, whether you believe in the virus, don't believe in the virus, believe that the virus is good, the virus is bad, the virus is going to kill you, it's not going to kill you, you're going to die tomorrow, all of that, irrelevant. We still don't know the long-term impacts of the virus. That's really not up for debate. It's been less than a year. So I don't think there's anybody who can actually debate that. If they do, they're a fool, and I'll just do what I always do, which is get rid of them.
I think on
given that we don't know.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Go ahead. I said, given that we do not know what the long-term effects are, the ACA going away, to me, should be the only issue that's part of this election. It's the only one that actually matters to everybody's daily lives, you know, beyond the fact of, you know, the rest of the stuff. But this law being overturned without a viable replacement already done.
For the pre-existing conditions, right?
Correct. I don't care about anything else. I don't care about all the mandates and the individual mandate, which is ridiculous and bullshit and should never have happened and was unconstitutional from day one. All that's irrelevant. What's relevant is the pre-existing condition protection that was in the law.
Right.
Because if you don't, you know, if you're self-employed, which I am, and I don't know how many of your listeners are, if you don't get access to healthcare through your employer and you have to buy your insurance on the secondary market and you have a pre-existing condition, say goodnight, because you ain't getting insurance again. And being a cancer survivor, for me, I'm not voting for Biden, but if there was something that could get me to vote for Biden, it would be this, because I'm voting with my health. You know, it's one of those things where the GOP's had a plan to repeal and replace Obamacare for, what are we on, year 13? Well, they haven't repealed it, and they sure as hell haven't replaced it. And if we get rid of pre-existing conditions, insurance companies quite literally are going to run the roost again. And we don't know the long-term impacts of COVID, but they could say that a heart condition, a coronary condition, a kidney condition, a brain condition, all of that was due to COVID if you test for antibodies. And given that some studies have shown there's long-term impacts in those areas, whether you die or not, if you have insurance, that's something you should take heed of. Now, that being said, Amy Coney Barrett has 0.0 to do with this because it was going to be overturned regardless given the current makeup of the court. But if you're voting and you didn't know this, you should know this right now because this is what's going to happen. This is the law. This is how it works. And Trump's executive orders mean jack shit.
Okay, so what's interesting here is it's a bit more subtle than is reported a lot. So so people need to compartmentalize the whole individual mandate with, and it's separate, but it's linked. That's the problem. So your point is that there isn't a, if the individual mandate goes, then in effect, that's getting rid of a lot of the pre-existing condition support because they're kind of linked. But the pre-existing conditions is incredibly popular, right?
They're going to over, if they get rid of the, if they rule as Texas did, that the individual mandate is central to the law and the law cannot function without the individual mandate, then the entire law goes. And I happen to think that that's how they were going to rule, regardless of Amy Coney Barrett. I think this was happening anyway. So let me rephrase. It was happening anyway. If you have a conservative libertarian's view of the law, which with Ruth Bader Ginsburg being, you know, gone, I think there was no doubt where the court was going to go with that. So that's where we are. But that means if the whole law goes, the individual mandate, not the individual mandate, the pre-existing condition restrictions going right along with it. We're back to pre-Obamacare days where insurance companies can deny you. They can impose lifetime limits. They can do basically whatever they want, which, quite frankly, as a libertarian, I agree with. But the lack of the ability to get coverage with pre-existing conditions is a problem for those who do not get employer-sponsored coverage. And I'm one of those people, and I have a pre-existing condition. And for me, this is a huge issue.
It's just a mess, right? I mean, US healthcare is, I mean, people can love or hate systems in Europe, but I mean, honestly, like to have literally 50, 60, or I don't know, pre-existing conditions, was, what was the number? It was like getting on for 100 million or something. It's like, and if you add COVID onto
Chris,
it.
Yeah. Chris, everybody has a pre-existing condition. It's just a question of what they decide to define it as.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
You're getting older. That's so your pre-existing simple. Condition.
Oh, you drink alcohol? Oh, yeah. Good. So we're not going to cover your kidneys, your liver, right. your pancreas. It's you could designate anything a pre-existing condition if you tried hard enough. So this to me is I don't like Obamacare because I don't like individual mandates. I don't like mandates, period. I think they're unconstitutional, which they are. And the Supreme Court's about to tell you that again. But the idea of pre-existing conditions and eliminating insurance companies from not providing insurance was the right idea. They did what they did, but it's still the right
this
idea.
Is the problem,
it's
right?
The only reasonable idea.
Right. But this is the problem. Like, this affects, well, to your point, triple figure millions of Americans. And
it's everybody.
Right.
Everybody.
And one day it will be everyone, which sounds ridiculous. But, and then that's, by the way, when it breaks, or before then it breaks. But politicians have to. I mean, Trump, to your point, has always said they're going to repeal, replace, and GOP have, and not just Trump. And I mean, there's still never been a plan. So, and this is complex. So it's not the type of thing Trump's very good at, is sorting out something that's super. I mean, U.S. healthcare is incredibly complex. I don't think anyone thinks they have some silver bullets.
How is Chris? I'm going to take umbrage with that. How is healthcare? How is healthcare complex? Ready? Very simple. Cover pre-existing conditions. Charge for the risk. How is this complex?
Right, but charge everyone or charge just those people?
No. Subsidize the people who can't afford it because they can't afford it. Let's not give trillions of dollars overseas. Let's figure out how to subsidize Americans' healthcare, but cover every single person with subsidies, whatever it happens to be, to cover their premiums.
Right.
I don't really see how this is that difficult.
I'm not saying that it's complex, but the whole U.S. system, the fact that you can go and get a plaster put on you and they're going to charge you $2,000 or $3,000, which happens.
Yeah.
This is nuts.
You know why it is? Because we have no price discovery. That's why.
Right. So that's why I'm saying, and I know the exchanges sort of tried and failed in all honesty on this, but so drug pricing, everyone knows, is kind of gone nuts. But then one could argue, well, you know what? Pharma companies need to make money because, you know what? Who discovers the most new drugs in the world? New drugs? U.S. pharma companies. They may well be made elsewhere.
Well, I get that.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying it's complex, right? And then you've got every state and you've got the politics of every state. Like, you know, I think a lot of people on both sides would agree maybe on, not people on the extremes, right? But like, reasonable people, I'd say, could agree in principle of some of the principles. The problem is the devil is in the detail, and that's where it always falls apart.
Yeah, but think of it from a different perspective, right? If I'm trying to think of where I want to go with this, you know, keep talking because it'll come back to me.
All right. Well, I look, we don't need to go too deep in healthcare, so I wanted to finish with like. There's one of the things that you said, and you've had a couple of pinned tweets over the last kind of few months. And so let's just assume Trump does lose. Let's assume we've covered that he may or may not, right? But do you think if he does lose and he accepts he loses, do you think he will resign? And then with the understanding Pence would pardon him for federal crimes, But then would Pence pardon him? Because if you're thinking about the long term of the GOP, maybe Pence shouldn't. I mean, this gets very Nixon, but like, you know, and just to be clear, he's still going to have a bunch of non-federal things. You know, like Southern District of New York is pretty aggressively going after him. But like, just wondering what you think.
Well, on that.
These are the possible things. These could happen. So
I don't think he will resign. Because of the pardon necessarily. I think that's part of the calculus. But I think it's really more simple, Chris. What is Trump? He's a businessman, right? what does him sitting in a job that he's being fired from in 60 days do for him? Nothing. He wants to leave to go run his business and make money. I mean, I happen to think that's going to mean starting in TV news network, yeah, bitching about mail-in voting. That's why I think it's all part of a grand bargain. Like I've told you, he's just going to bitch and bitch and bitch so that when he leaves, he looks like he's safe face. And then he's going to run a TV news network, make a bazillion dollars, and then go run his hotel empire. But if he loses, there's no chance he's sitting in the office till mid-January. None. Would you? I'm asking, if you knew you were going to get fired, would you sit in an office to wait for 60 days for execution if you could go make money by leaving said office? I think we all know that's no. So he's going to, if he loses, he's leaving.
Right. And also, like in that scenario, I'd be very worried if I ran Fox News, because he's going to take all the people he wants from there. As in, he's not going to take Chris, what's the guy that did the first debate? Chris Wallace. But, you know, if you're Tucker Carlson or whatever, I assume he'll be going with Trump. He's going to get cracking on that straight away.
TNN, Trump News Network. Get ready for it, because that's what's coming.
Oh my God, it is going to be TNN, isn't it? Yeah. I was trying to think of a name the other day. I didn't think of that one. It is.
Yeah, TNN. I mean, to me, this is very, very simple. What CEO on the planet is going to sit in a position where they know they're getting fired, right? In 60, like, it's not a mystery, right? They know they're being removed and fired. So no. If Trump loses, he's resigning. He's going to resign so he can run his business, because there's no point in staying otherwise. So that's where I land on that. That being said, I don't think he's going to take the result absent a clear victory in stride. I think we're going to have what I've told you. But if he did lose, clearly, he's going to resign. And I know people disagree with that, and you know, they can say whatever they want to say, but at the end of the day, he'll resign because he wants to run his company.
Yeah, and also does silly things like, if he loses badly, then he's not going to want to be there on the 21st of January, handing over to.
No.
His ego won't take that.
He'll just, exactly. He's there are, if Trump isn't the winner and doesn't see a path to victory through the courts. And by the way, I've said this, what he's doing, everything that he is doing, if I was his lawyer, is exactly what I'd be advising him to do. You delegitimize the ballots, you challenge the votes, you stir up the public, and possession is 9/10 of the law. He has the presidency. You want it. You have to prove you want it. I know exactly what he's doing. I know why he's doing it. But if he truly does not have a path to victory, he will resign, because he'll go run his campaign, and maybe Pence gives him a pardon, and maybe he bitches and protests in exchange for a pardon, where everybody just moves on and it's like, Trump, just go away, which is highly possible.
Right. And also, I think would be, look, I'm absolutely against going after politicians post office, unless they've done something like shot someone or like, I mean, he didn't really go after Clinton, in all honesty. So, like, you know, he said a bunch of stuff and nothing really happened. I mean, on the emails and stuff. And again, that was not a clear cut case. I mean, it clearly lost to the election last time, but like, and many other things. But, you know, I'm not an advocate of, you know, if you start going after politicians, you're on a very slippery slope. So I suspect you're right in that scenario. You get to some form of bargain or whatever, and miraculously some things go away in some district of New York or whatever, not that they would know that yet, but and then we move on. He does his thing and his network. I'd like TNN, it's good, I like that. And
that's happening.
See, who's got that website, TNN.com? Let's hope this isn't like a porn site. I'm just going to it. Oh, it's a really, really rubbish site. The Network Inc. Oh, wow. It looks like you could buy that for, offer them $1 million and you're getting that site. Wow. That site.
I promise you.
That in 1993. That's incredible.
There is nothing on this earth I am more sure of than the Trump News Network is launching whenever he leaves office.
All righty. Look, we've spoken for a good hour. So, well, actually more than that. So any final thoughts? I mean, we've covered a lot, but I mean, we're literally, what?
Yeah.
Within 48 hours, some of this stuff will or won't play out. So, you know, you and I are going to be very right or very wrong very, very quickly. So, you know, but that's why we wanted to do this, right? To get it out there just as a, you know, it's hopefully
10:30 p.m. Tuesday. Nothing matters until then. Doesn't matter what they report. Doesn't matter what they say. It matters what Trump says by his Twitter account, 10:30 Tuesday.
And sorry, 10:30, because that's when the Rust Belt starts to release the first data.
That's when we should know if North Carolina is a win or loss. We'll have a good idea of Pennsylvania and, and Michigan, Wisconsin. Like 10:30 p.m. is when I expect his tweets to start running around.
Yeah, actually, because traditionally, if there isn't an election winner, there isn't a winner by 11, people start getting pissed off that it's taking too long. I think I'm writing saying something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, 10:30 p.m. Tuesday, everything that's going – and mind you, I don't see a scenario where everything I've laid out doesn't happen absent a clear Biden lead at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Florida, Texas, and Iowa. If he does not have a clear lead in those states, and I mean quite literally all of them, at 10 o'clock on Tuesday, watch his Twitter. You'll understand exactly what I've said. Everything I've said is going to make a lot of sense at that time.
All right. That's a good place to end. Thank you again for the third appearance. And I'm sure we'll do something else in the future. We need to do a
Bitcoin. Bitcoin.
And Greg Krenner wants to come on. Maybe we do a three-way one on that and have different views. So,
absolutely. Bring the Bitcoin discussion, please.
Okay. All right. Let's leave it there. And thanks again.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.